The Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, ADL, and its falsification of history to rehabilitate a homicidal molester of children found at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. By Phil St. Raymond, permission to republish granted, May 14, 2026, since its founding in the shadow and aftermath of Leo Frank's 1913 trial and conviction, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, also known as the ADL, has helped turn the Mary Fagan murder case into an institutional parable about emotional Judeophobia. In its retelling, the rape and strangulation victim, 13-year-old Mary Fagan, is pushed into the fading background as an afterthought, and homicidal rapist pedophile Leo Frank is presented as the victim of ethnic prejudice, religious bigotry, sectional or regional xenophobia, false accusation, Judenhass, and bloodthirsty mob hysteria, while the legal record that sustained his conviction through repeated judicial review is also pushed into the background. Leo Frank's conviction passed through Georgia's courts, more than once through the Georgia Supreme Court, and reached the United States Supreme Court too, yet ADL narratives have continued to describe the case as though the verdict were simply the product of hatred, rather than a prosecution built on forensic evidence, testimony, timing, exhibits, and legal findings. One revealing example appears in a 1980s ADL document preserved at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. And fanning the flames of hatred was the trial by prejudice of Leo Frank, who was publicly described as a Yankee Jew, falsely accused of murdering a young girl, tried in an Atlanta GA courtroom with spectators clamoring for his death, and found guilty. Once the ADL's 1970s and 1980s retelling of the Leo Frank case, preserved in the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library under the heading ADL, Yesterday and Today, is a revealing example of how the organization transformed a controversial pedophilia and rape murder case into an oversimplified origin mythology and martyrdom legend. The passage describes Frank's prosecution as a trial by prejudice, says he was publicly described as a Yankee Jew, claims he was falsely accused of murdering Mary Fagan, and portrays the Atlanta courtroom as filled with spectators clamoring for his death. The phrasing is theatrical and engineered for dramatic effect, but it is not careful history. It lacks nuance. It is emotional partisan rhetoric for its intended audience of hyper-ethnocentric donors and their woke mind virus affiliates. It is tawdry, Leo Frank rehabilitation propaganda. It compresses accusation, coroner's inquest, grand jury hearing, trial, conviction, appeal, commutation, lynching, and later institutional memory into one overheated paragraph. One, Leo Frank was not tried inside a furnace of anti-Jewish slogans, contrary to what later activist retellings imply. The mainstream Atlanta daily newspapers that covered the trial in meticulous detail, including the Atlanta Constitution, the Atlanta Journal, and the Atlanta Georgian, reported curious throngs, intense public interest, packed courtrooms, sensational testimony, and tremendous civic attention. But crowded courtrooms and widespread public concern are not the same thing as proof that the jury convicted Frank because the courtroom was ruled by Jew-hating mobs, terrorist intimidation, or shouted death threats chanted at the jury and judge. Nor are they proof that the mainstream trial press called him a Yankee Jew. Yankee Jew. Unless the ADL can produce a contemporary mainstream 1913 Atlanta trial citation from using that phrase, Yankee Jew should be treated as a later interpretive label backdated from other sources, like Tom Watson, not as established trial-era press language in daily reportage. In fact, Mary Fagan Keene transcribed the Atlanta trial coverage published between July 28, 1913 and August 28, 1913, and in that body of mainstream newspaper reporting, Leo Frank was never once called a Yankee Jew. That absence matters. It shows how later extremist retellings can smuggle a loaded phrase backward into the trial atmosphere, making a retrospective accusation look like contemporary evidence. Anachronism. Anachronism is one of the most common dirty tricks used in Leo Frank apologetics. When later events are deliberately backdated into an earlier historical record, it is not interpretation. It is academic fraud. By definition, an anachronism is something placed in the wrong historical time period. That is exactly what happens when later rhetoric, later ad hominem, and later public agitation elsewhere are projected backward into the 1913 trial record. The result is anachronism disguised as historiography. Later events are smuggled into an earlier moment and then treated as if they had been there all along. We saw this in the 2026 PBS documentary Let My People Go, where Jewish ethno-religious activist professors backdated rhetoric from an isolated 1915 publication into the 1913 Leo Frank trial. Tom Watson. Tom Watson's publications, far outside Atlanta's mainstream, had a small, factional, left-wing populist following rather than a mainstream position in Georgia's press world. Watson appealed to a particular and narrow political constituency: populist loyalists, rural readers, anti-corporate reformers, and later readers drawn to Watson's more combative polemics. That made Watson influential with a narrowly selective audience. He was not synonymous with the mainstream Atlanta press. His 1915 rhetoric should not be backdated and treated as though it reflected the ordinary language of the newspapers that covered the Leo Frank trial day by day in July and August of 1913. Watson is only one isolated example of a narrow and factional political audience in the entire body of the Georgia press. Leo Frank supporters take the opinion of one polemicist, project it writ large, and suggest everyone must have thought this way. Retroactively inserting later events into earlier events is a form of academic fraud because it manufactures historical causation. It makes the reader believe that reflected opinions from one man with a limited press in 1915 explain a verdict rendered in 1913, even when the later material did not yet exist or had not yet reached the form being claimed. This is not a small interpretive error. It changes the evidentiary field. It turns later propaganda from a populist politician with a harsh opinion into earlier courtroom atmosphere, later outrage at Frank's defense suborning perjury into earlier motive, and later myth into supposed contemporary fact. Falsely accused. The phrase falsely accused is also not a neutral description of the case. It is an after-the-fact conclusion imposed on a prosecution that produced a murder indictment, a trial, a conviction, failed appeals, and a commutation rather than an exoneration. Even Georgia's 1986 pardon did not declare Leo Frank innocent. The State Board of Pardons and Paroles explicitly stated that it was acting without attempting to address the question of guilt or innocence, and based the pardon on the state's failure to protect Frank and preserve his opportunity for continued appeal. 4. That distinction matters because Leo Frank's guilty verdict was not overturned in that decision. A pardon for state failure after a lynching is not the same thing as a legal finding that Leo Frank was innocent of Mary Fagan's murder. Leo Frank's guilt, proven beyond reasonable doubt. The evidence against Leo Frank was not imaginary. By his own statements, he placed himself in the National Pencil Company office at the crucial time on Saturday, April 26, 1913, when Mary Fagan came to collect her pay. When events were fresh in memory, State's Exhibit B records Leo Frank's April 28, 1913 deposition telling Atlanta Chief of Detectives Newport Lanford that Mary arrived between about 12:05 and 12:10 p.m., that he paid her, and that she left his office. 5. The timing problem became more incriminating because Montine Stover testified that she entered Frank's office area around the same 5-minute window, approximately 12:05 to 12:10 p.m., and did not see him there. 6. Whether one accepts the prosecution's theory or not, this was not a baseless accusation invented out of pure prejudice. It was a case built around deposition, affidavit, location, opportunity, timing, witness testimony, demeanor, physical evidence in the machine room located opposite Frank's office, shifting explanations, and the prosecution's interpretation of Frank's conduct before and after the murder. The emotional scary tale of persecution. That is why the ADL wording is so misleading. It takes a legally complex record and replaces it with a lachrymose morality script. Frank as innocent victim, Atlanta as a prejudiced machine of Jew-hating bigotry, the jury as a mob instrument of terrorism, and Mary Fagan's murder as a fading backdrop to institutional self-definition. Extrajudicial lynching. The lynching of Leo Frank in 1915 was lawless vigilante violence, but condemning the lynching does not require rewriting the 1913 trial into a cartoon of hatred. Two things can be true at once. Frank should not have been lynched, and the evidence presented against him at trial cannot honestly be dismissed as a false accusation manufactured out of thin air. Leo Frank was not lynched because of his religion. What ignited the final crisis was not Frank's spiritual faith, but Georgia Governor John M. Slayton's commutation of the death sentence by hanging. Slayton's direct partnership connection to the law firm involved in Frank's defense gave the decision the appearance of insider privilege, and that perception helped turn public anger into open revolt. That is not the same thing as someone being killed because of religious bigotry. The ADL is an extremist organization that falsifies history. The deeper problem is that the ADL's institutional story depends on manipulating the timeline and distorting the facts of the trial. The 1913 trial, the 1914 and 1915 appeals campaign, Tom Watson's later polemics, Governor John Slayton's commutation, the abduction of Frank, and the lynching are treated as one continuous eruption of Jew hatred. But Frank was hanged for his crime, not his spiritual faith, and all those events described above were separate phases, with different sources, actors, pressures, and documentary records. Once those stages are fused together, the later heat of 1915 is projected backward into the 1913 courtroom. That is how a contested murder trial becomes an origin legend and martyrdom mythology. References 1. Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, 1985-1988. ADL, Yesterday and Today, in Max Green Files, Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, 2 of 7, Box 30, Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, 2, United States Supreme Court, 1915, Frank v. Mangum, 237 U.S., 309, Justia, U.S. Supreme Court Center, 3, Anti-Defamation League, 2015, December 8th, Remembering Leo Frank, 4, Georgia State Board of Pardons and Paroles, 1986, March 11th, Decision in response to application for posthumous pardon for Leo M. Frank, State Board of Pardons and Paroles. 5. The Atlanta Constitution, 1913, August 2nd. States Exhibit B from the 1913 Leo Frank trial, retrieved from 6 Mary Fagan Keene Legacy Project, 2025, August 7th. Miss Montine Stover sworn in for the state, 12th to testify.